from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network. This is EWTN News Nightly.
Peace begins with each one of us and the way we look at others, listen to others, and speak about others.
It's been 1 week since the world met Pope Leo XIV, and the newly elected pontiff is already making his mark on the church. Tonight we'll look back at his first week and more during this very historic time. Thank you very much for being with us on this Feast of St. Isidore. I'm Owen Jensen. We'll have much more on Pope Leo XIV in a moment. But we begin with the war in Ukraine. The world will have to wait longer for a breakthrough resolution to end that terrible conflict. Russian President Vladimir Putin opted to skip the trip to Turkey for peace talks. President Donald Trump spoke about the situation during his trip to the Middle East.
Nothing's going to happen until Putin and I get together, okay? And obviously he wasn't going to go. He was going to go, but he thought I was going to go. He wasn't going if I wasn't there. And I don't believe anything's going to happen, whether you like it or not, until he and I get together. But we're going to have to get it solved because too many people are dying.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made the trip to Turkey to hold face-to-face talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. But Putin stayed home, dashing hopes for a deal.
Marco's there, Secretary of State, and we have people there. But I didn't think it was possible for Putin to go if I'm not there.
During his trip to Qatar, President Donald Trump provided an update on Iran.
So we'll see what happens, but we're in very serious negotiations with Iran for long-term peace.
And the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza.
I have concepts for Gaza that I think are very good. Make it a freedom zone. Let the United States get involved.
The president also addressed troops at a large U.S. airbase in Qatar, telling them,
as president, my priority is to end conflicts, not start them, but I will never hesitate to wield American power if it's necessary to defend the United States of America or our partners.
And after a send-off, President Trump took off for his third stop in the Middle East, the United Arab Emirates. There he met with leaders and toured their largest mosque.
This is an incredible culture that I can say.
Later, enjoying a state visit in the UAE. Arriving at the presidential palace, the president sat down with both delegations.
We're going to be your partner, and we really appreciate your confidence and an investment. That's your biggest investment that you've ever made, and we really appreciate it.
While President Trump travels across the Middle East, Israel is keeping up its relentless campaign of airstrikes on Gaza. Dozens are dead after a second consecutive night of heavy bombing. It comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed this week to step up the offensive. One of the strikes in northern Gaza hit a mosque and a small medical clinic. Hamas still holds 58 of the roughly 250 hostages it abducted during its deadly October 7th attack on Israel. 1 week after his election, Pope Leo XIV is already making his mark. His constant appeals for peace in war-torn nations and his concern for countries suffering persecution are quickly shaping the character of his papacy. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina De Donato has more.
The moment a pope steps onto the loggia balcony of St. Peter's Basilica, a signal of his leadership style becomes evident. Pope Leo XIV, the first U.S. Pope and second Pope of the Americas, has had a busy first week. And from the day the faithful first saw him, his first message for peace for all, through discernment and action, has been consistent. This message has continued every day in a practical and direct style.
I carry in my heart the sufferings of the beloved Ukrainian people. May everything possible be done to reach an authentic, just, and lasting peace as soon as possible. Let all the prisoners be freed and the children return to their own families.
The Pope's first call with a political leader was with Ukrainian President Zelensky, after which the president posted on X to thank His Holiness for his support of Ukraine and all of our people. Zelensky also invited Pope Leo to visit the country on an apostolic trip. On Monday, Pope Leo XIV spoke to journalists about the importance of communicating truth and how informing people is also an integral part of obtaining peace, reminding journalists, blessed are the peacemakers.
La pace comincia da ognuno di noi.
Peace begins with each one of us, in the way we look at others, listen to others, and speak about others. In this sense, the way we communicate is of fundamental importance. We must say no to the war of words and images. We must reject the paradigm of war.
Dobbiamo respingere il paradigma della guerra.
On Wednesday, Pope Leo XIV also spoke to Eastern Catholics at the Vatican for the Jubilee of Eastern Churches, emphasizing the importance of Eastern traditions and asking the Dicastery for Eastern Churches to help define principles, norms, and guidelines to preserve their heritage. He also offered to host or facilitate peace talks among countries at war and suffering persecution, calling for world leaders to meet, talk, and negotiate.
I will make every effort so that this peace may prevail. The Holy See is always ready to help bring enemies together, face to face, to talk to one another, so that peoples everywhere may once more find hope and recover the dignity they deserve. The dignity of peace.
Pope Leo also met privately with his beatitude, Major Archbishop Svetoslav Shevchuk of Kiev, head of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. In a moment of levity, Pope Leo XIV, a noted tennis fan and player, also met with the world's number one player, Jannik Sinner, and they even almost shared a game. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
And a week after the papal election, several cardinals sat down with EWTN to discuss their relationship with Pope Leo and share their hopes for what his papacy will look like.
I came to know him better when he came to the Curia, and of course I've had many meetings with him. We've served together on the CDF, the DDF as it's called now, and through the Safeguarding Commission, had many different meetings with him and was impressed by his intellectual capacity, certainly his linguistic abilities, and the experience. I think God has prepared him for this role. People say he's an American. Yes, but he spent half his life in Latin America and is a citizen of Peru, and then spent years here in Rome, which is so beautiful because the Pope is the Bishop of Rome.
That's
and
right.
You have to be able to say to the Romans, this is someone who understands you and loves you and experiences your culture and speaks your language, and he has all of these things. You can see how God in his providence was preparing him for this very special mission in our church.
I think he will give a sign that the social doctrine of the church is very important for him in the revolutionary situation that we have today with the digital world. And this is a concern for him. But third, I'm also convinced because Leo XIII was also a very Marian pope. He has wrote many things about the rosary and exhortations. And we have seen by the presentation on the end, he has invited all people to pray with him the Ave Maria.
We heard some of his reaction when he was saying that Jesus Christ is at the center of the life of the church. Jesus Christ is at the center of our evangelization. We have not to evangelize other worlds, this world, with people, with so many problems, with so many difficulties. And in these many difficulties, he said that Jesus Christ will be at the center. I am sure it will be at the center of his pontificate.
There is a new chapter in the pontificate of Pope Leo XIV. EWTN is excited to announce its book on the first American pope is available now for pre-order. Written by our very own Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who's written dozens of books, Leo XIV Portrait of the first American Pope is the first authoritative book on the new Holy Father. It examines the life and beliefs of former Cardinal Robert Prevost, while also taking a closer look at his improbable journey to the chair of St. Peter. The book is set to hit bookshelves by the end of the month. Joining us from Rome is Dr. Bunsen. Matthew, good to see you. And congratulations, by the way, on your brand new book. And let me start by saying, pretty amazing you've been able to write this so fast when the world didn't even know who the new pope would be just 8 days ago. My first question to you, my friend, is why was it important for you to have this book out so quickly?
Yeah, it's actually a great question because, as you know, anytime we have a new Holy Father, the world is very curious about him. They want to know as much as they can, as quickly as they can. And one of the things that we realized many years ago, we saw that with Pope Benedict XVI in 2005 and Pope Francis in 2013, is that many of the things that you read or watch in secular media either isn't inaccurate or is sort of a deliberate misrepresentation. So what we want to do with this book is to offer a first portrait of the life, formation, and journey of Robert Francis Prevost from Chicago all the way to Rome, and now, of course, as Pope Leo XIV.
And, you know, every time I hear he's from Chicago, I still have to slap myself. I grew up in Kenosha, just north of Chicago, Kenosha, Wisconsin. I just think, oh, he's practically right in my own neighborhood. But when lay people like myself, lay Catholics, pick up this book, and I don't want you to give it all away because you want people to read it, obviously, but yeah. What are a couple of the big things or one big thing that people will learn about the new pope, Pope Leo XIV, that they didn't know before, if you can share that?
Yeah, well, we're aware, of course, that this is the first U.S.-born pope. This is the first pope from North America. This is the second pope from the Americas. All of that, the world has learned very quickly. But a few of the things that the world doesn't know particularly is that he is an Augustinian. He's a member of the great Augustinian order that dates back all the way to the Middle Ages, but also traces its roots back to St. Augustine. He is a deeply Augustinian pontiff. He is someone who has deeply imbued with the Augustinian spirituality, with all of that means. He has also taken the name Leo XIV in honor of Leo XIII, the great pope, 1878 to 1903, who is, like Pope Leo XIV, taken up profoundly with the concerns of the encounter between the church and modernity. We had the great industrial revolution at the end of the 19th century. He is very concerned about the technological and digital revolutions that are taking place right now in the 21st century. So he's a man very much of his times, but somebody who understands the importance of the perennial aspects of church teaching to apply them to all the modern situations that we can find ourselves in.
And in our remaining moments here, I could go on forever with you here, but due to the constraints of time, let me just ask you here, away from the book for a second. EWTN's coverage of the death of Pope Francis and the election of a new pope, Leo, over the last several weeks has been extraordinary and absolutely just stunning.
Thank you.
Mother A would be proud. What has been your proudest moment in this coverage, Matthew?
I will always remember for the rest of my life being in St. Peter's Square and watching Pope Leo XIV come out onto that loggia and being greeted with the first U.S.-born pope in church history, but then also from the start, getting to know him and those stunning words of his, peace be with you. But he's talked about the peace of the risen Christ. And I think this is a journey that we've been on now for a month or so since the passing of Pope Francis. We are now continuing that journey with Pope Leo XIV. And I think all of us are looking forward to seeing what roads he takes us down.
Well, keep up the tremendous work. And finally, on the book, when does it come out and where can folks get it?
Yeah, the book will be published next week, hopefully on the 21st. You can go to RC Catalog, Religious Catalog, EWTN.com. You can also find it at Amazon for pre-order. So thank you so much. It's great to talk with you, Owen, and also great privilege to talk about this book.
And good luck with the book. Get out there and read it, folks. It's going to be absolutely a thrill to read, and you're going to learn a lot. Matthew, good to see you.
Take care. God bless.
All right. We have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including today the Supreme Court heard about President Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship, but the arguments did not focus specifically on the 14th Amendment. We'll explain. Plus, the president's big, beautiful bill. We'll have the very latest on where that all stands as we speak. Welcome back. Secretary of State Marco Rubio was asked today what he thinks of the migration stance of Pope Leo XIV and how it squares with the Trump administration's policies.
The Pope is not a political figure. I know he's covered like one, but they're not. They're the earthly head of the Roman Catholic Church. And the church has strong social doctrine teachings, and I think there is not incompatibility. We, too, are compassionate towards migrants. I would argue there's nothing compassionate about mass migration. There's nothing compassionate about open borders that allows people to be trafficked here.
In a high-stakes hearing, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on whether a single district court judge has the power to block a policy across the country. The case stems from the executive order President Donald Trump issued on his first day in office. The EO would deny citizenship to children born on U.S. soil to parents who are in the country illegally or temporarily. A series of nationwide injunctions blocked the plan as soon as it was announced back in January. Listen to this exchange today between Solicitor General John Schauer and Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Respectfully, I think what we have are lower courts making snap judgments on the merits that ignore the fundamental principle of the 14th Amendment, that it was about giving citizenship to the children of slaves, not to the children of illegal immigrants who really were not even a very discrete class at that time.
And that's the sort of argument that deserves percolation. There were some people in Congress who argued against the 13th Amendment just because of that. Some people who argued against passing the amendment just because of that, because it would give citizenship to gypsies.
I think the relevant history of the 14th Amendment is the statements of Senator Trumbull, who emphasized that domicile was the key criterion. He said that in a letter to Andrew Jackson. And we've cited our Ninth Circuit briefing a host of decisions that rejected that repeatedly.
Okay, so let's discuss this with Thomas Berry. He is the director of the Cato Institute's Robert A. Levy Center for Constitutional Studies and editor-in-chief of the Cato Supreme Court Review. Thank you, sir, very much for joining us. How do you see this going right out of the gate?
Very hard to predict, because justices on both the left and the right at various times have criticized so-called nationwide or universal injunctions issued by a single district court judge. There's not a clear partisan valence to this case. I think all of the justices see the downsides to this. They see how it causes cases to be rushed up to the Supreme Court when a policy is blocked nationwide. But certainly the more liberal justices were also very concerned about this particular policy. And I think they're more sympathetic to a nationwide injunction, at least in this case, where in the view of some justices like Sotomayor, this action is not just unconstitutional, but obviously unconstitutional. I think it'll come down to the usual swing votes. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Amy Coney Barrett are the two most important and hardest to guess.
Well, it's a fascinating case for sure. Strong arguments to be made. For our audience, please explain, it's not really about the birthright citizenship. It's about whether individual judges can issue these rulings that impact the entire nation, correct? Or am I wrong?
That's right. We're not yet at the merits of the constitutional question. The only issue the justices are considering right now is what's going to be the status quo as the case is litigating. Can a single district court judge, one of about 600 across the country, block a policy across all 300 plus million Americans, or can they only block it with respect to the particular people who brought the lawsuit, the people named in the case caption? That's the issue here, and it would obviously have big consequences for those people who are not part of this lawsuit, but who could be affected by the policy while the case is being litigated.
And a decision expected, I believe, in June or July. Does this have the ability to set a precedent going forward?
It very much could. That's the biggest open question. Will the justices go narrow and only decide it with respect to this case, or will they go big and decide going forward whether judges can ever issue nationwide injunctions? It's possible they could put an end to it permanently, and that would have unpredictable effects, but it would change the way cases are litigated against both Republican and Democratic presidents.
And last question, where else, I know you don't have your crystal ball here, and it looks like this could be close, but is there one compelling argument from either side that you think will put this over the victory line for either side?
For me, I think the biggest issue that the justices are worried about is the chaos and the rushed nature of nationwide injunctions, the fact that it essentially forces the Supreme Court to take the case in a very fast manner because the district court kind of pushes the issue. So if I had to guess, I would think that they're going to put an end to nationwide injunctions and say, no, we're going to let each district just handle the particular people who brought that case, give more courts a chance to come to different conclusions until it comes up to the Supreme Court.
We are now out of time. Thomas Berry, thank you very much for your insights and legal expertise. We appreciate it. Have a good day. We'll see you later.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay. Other news tonight, House Republicans are ironing out their reconciliation package for President Trump's domestic agenda. Other GOP lawmakers are calling for three Democrats to be punished after they stormed an Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in New Jersey. And some are sounding off about that gift of a luxury jet to President Trump. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has a rundown of the news from the Hill. Eric.
Good evening, Owen. Let's start with the reconciliation bill. Earlier today, House Speaker Mike Johnson met with members of the Freedom Caucus who've been furious about the One Big Beautiful Bill doesn't go far enough to cut government spending, especially on Medicaid. And others want more revisions to state and local taxes.
Not everybody's going to be delighted with every provision in a bill this large, but everyone can be satisfied. And we're very, very close to that. So I've committed to work throughout the weekend on it. Others are as well.
You cannot push me. You cannot push me. You cannot push me.
Temperatures are also rising over an altercation between three Democratic lawmakers and immigration agents at a detention center in New Jersey. Congresswoman LaMonica McGiver was one of those involved.
So it was very high tension. I mean, they created all of the chaos and the confusion and, you know, what was happening. Everything people see on the video, they escalated that. And so it was just very much a very frightening moment and a very tense moment as that played out.
Speaker Johnson says punishment by the House is likely.
You can censure a member, and that probably does seem appropriate here. You can kick them off committees. That's a new tradition begun by the Democrats in recent years. And you can expel someone from Congress. Now, expulsion requires a two-thirds vote. That's not likely because the margins are small on both sides. But we're looking at what is appropriate.
Lawmakers are also speaking out about the Qatari royal family offering a $400 million luxury jet for President Trump to use as Air Force One. Democrats say it's against the Constitution and call it a bribe, along with a national security threat.
News of the Qatari government gifting Donald Trump a $400 million private jet to use as Air Force One is so corrupt that even Putin would give a double take.
As a result, the Senate minority leader is placing a hold on all Justice Department political nominees. Republicans tell me they need to see more specifics.
We do not know the details of the offer, and therefore, since it is an offer and we do not know the details, we're probably better off not to give an opinion.
Back to the reconciliation bill, Speaker Johnson is also holding an all-member GOP conference meeting as the Budget Committee prepares to mark up the bill tomorrow and a vote possibly next week. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you, Eric. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, learn more about an organization protecting the academic freedom of children and the rights of their parents to direct their education. Stick around. Welcome back. An international organization that pushes for freedom of education is examining the state of Catholic schools, and especially if those schools are facing limits on their religious liberty. International Organization for the Right to Education and Freedom of Education, OIDEL, is also defending the right of parents to direct the education of their children rather than leaving those decisions to the government. The group recently partnered with the University of Notre Dame for a symposium on the state of Catholic schools and the issue of school choice. And for more now, we are joined in the studio by Ignasi Grau, General Director of OIDEL. And Ignasi, thank you very much for being here today. So sum it up for us, if you will, in a nutshell. What is the state of religious freedom and Catholic schools across the globe right now? Is there one spot in particular you want to focus on that's very troublesome for you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. As you know, there is a lot of tensions in the world, and education is also a subject that suffers. I'm here today, these days, in the United States because tensions are growing everywhere, and also, but at the same time, in the U.S., we are seeing a lot of opportunities. Now we are seeing that President Trump is a priority for him. School choice, also, we are seeing many states that are implementing programs, but while we are seeing that in the United States, we are seeing tensions in many other countries. We are seeing extreme cases like Nicaragua or Eritrea in which Catholic schools are being closed. But also in the Western world, school choice is a matter of polarization. Freedom of education appears in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, yet it seems like some parties have forgotten that. And they are making that a political discussion when this is a human rights discussion and all parents should have these rights.
You granted. Brought up Nicaragua, for example. Yeah. As most people know, many people know, Catholics are being persecuted by the Ortega regime. Mm-hmm. How is it impacting schools there, kids who go to school, Catholic schools? They're being shut down, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine a situation in which Catholics are being persecuted and it doesn't have an impact on schools. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm not a particular expert on that, but what we know and what we are receiving is that there is a lot of tensions for Catholic schools, for Catholic principals, and for Catholic families. And we know that, like, every time someone wants to take control of a country, one thing they do is take control of the schools. So it shouldn't surprise us what is happening. We should be worried about, but we see that over and over. Like, when a political leader wants to take control of their country and they don't trust their citizens, the first thing they do is taking control of the school. We have see that in the USSR. We have see that in Nazi Germany. So no surprise that this is happening in Nicaragua. It's worrying, but that's what dictators do.
And as you mentioned, the current administration, the Trump administration, a big believer in school choice. Mm-hmm. What would you tell parents out there, for example, who might be watching, their child is in a less than stellar school somewhere, you know, a poor performing school. They want to get their child out, but they're having trouble getting them into the school of their choice. What do you say to that? What's your concern about that?
Well, I mean, freedom of education, as I say, is a fundamental right. It appears in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It appears in most of the international treaties. And even the Supreme Court of this country has said it's a constitutional right. What I'm more worried about, parents worrying about that, is, again, like, we are putting this discussion as a political discussion when this should be a discussion of rights, of human rights. And the main obligation of politicians and legislators should not be over if we recognize or not this right. Like, how are we making this happen? The same way we do that with other rights. We don't negotiate over freedom of expression. We just have to grant this right. And with freedom of education, it should be the same. That's what should happen in democracies.
Well, sir, keep up the fight, the good fight for Catholic schools and freedom of choice and parental choice. And it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming in and
talking
to us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, stick around. We're going to take off. We're going to end the show right now. But we thank you for watching tonight, EWTN News Nightly. Remember, you can follow us on social media. Have a great night, everybody. I'm Owen Jensen. Good night, and God bless you.